This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. My name is Rich Bradbury. As usual, I am joined, not in the studio, by the man with the news. We call him Mr. Arif Roos. Say hello, Arif.
Hello, Richard.
And then over on the other side, I've got Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, gents. Hello, listeners. And welcome to the number one automotive show on radio in the world.
Right, as usual, we've got two pieces for you today. The show's in two parts, of course. First up, it'll be news updates and some car launches, followed by a used car guide to the 2012 Toyota GT86, otherwise known as the Subaru BRZ, or in English, the BRZ. Right, who wants to go first then? Arif.
Right, the news this week, there's not much really, but a couple of news bites and announcements. And the first of which is that the AP holders apparently want some import tax rebates. Can you tell us a bit more about this, Daniel?
Okay, last Wednesday, MITI held a town hall for the existing AP holders. There's about 170-odd AP holders in Malaysia. Now, this is hot news, and I got it off one of the AP holders who shared what happened with me. And the thing is, since the lockdown, they've not been able to sell any cars. And then after the lockdown, there was a very slow uptake. And then the government gave sales tax rebate for new cars. And of course, it affects them. But they are saying it's not enough for them to stimulate their sales, simply because the prices of new manufactured cars from the new car showrooms have come down quite a bit, that it almost meets their selling prices. So to the general Malaysian, hey, you got price margin, sell at cost lah, bro. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And of course, then there's another group of people are saying, hey, you've made enough money over the years. Can you just keep quiet and allow the other people to make some money? And then there's a third group that's saying, hey, you guys are already so rich, that kind of thing. But end of the day, I had to look at this head on and say, okay, what is the issue here? First of all, these guys have spent money bringing the cars in. Then they've each paid 10,000 ringgit, the AP. Each AP cost 10,000 ringgit, which is paid to the Minister of International Trade and Industry. Then they got to store the cars in a showroom, which has got air conditioning and staff and everything else, which costs a bit of money. Then they've got their profit margin, of course. Now, with all this going on, they are seeing customers coming in. Some of them are telling me they have customers coming in. But when they compare the prices, even after they give a little bit of a discount, it's difficult for them to manage. Now, I can sympathize a little bit with them because why? They have overheads, they have staff, they have bills to pay. Yes, they've made money before. They're probably sitting on a lot of asset value. But, you know, like any business owner, you know, look at the airlines. Some of the airlines, some of the big business owners, look at Genting, for example. He has made billions over the years. But few months of suffering, he wants to lay off a lot of workers, you know?
Yeah.
Air Asia, they've made billions over the years. Few months of suffering, oh, I need a big handout from the government. So I can understand the same thing going on with these guys. So if the government is going to give a handout to other companies, these guys are not asking for a handout. They're just asking for a reduction in tax, which will also help Malaysians buy these cars at a lower price. So in the consumer's eyes, you're going to get a better deal. So I think it's a win there a little bit. Consumer gets a cheaper car, the AP holder gets to sell his car. That's what I'm saying.
Basically, the AP holders weren't included in the rebates and they want to have them now, right?
Yes. And the rebate they're asking for, of course, is quite a lot. They're asking for 50% tax rebate. I think 50%, the government is going to say no because the government needs this tax money. Because like I give you an example in my article, tax on a Toyota Wish, which is probably the cheapest AP car you can buy right now, which is just below 100,000. The tax to pay to the government is 18,000 ringgit estimated. So if you ask for half, that's a 9,000 discount. Now, 9,000 times, don't know how many thousand of these cars are sold every month. That's quite a bit of money, you know. But the Malaysian customer can now walk in and buy this car if they get the tax rebate for 80,000 ringgit instead of 90,000 ringgit. So you have to look at two sides of the point, you know. So it's tough, but I still think this is not going to happen. I don't think the Ministry of Finance and MITI is going to give them this rebate. I think they're just going to tell them, listen, suck it up, guys. You've made money before, eat into your bank account.
Eat into your savings and stuff that you've already made money from years ago.
Yes, yes.
I can agree with that because like 50% is a lot. A
lot of money.
Yeah, and just looking at some figures here, the auto industry last year collected more than 25% of the total government tax collection, which is kind of surprising. 13.16 billion ringgit.
Ooh.
That is a lot of money. And 50% reduction in that tax would be, what, 6.5 billion.
This is including new cars and imported cars and
cars,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe you take from the AP business loan, let's take a quarter of this. That's still a lot of money. You know, that's like 3 billion odd ringgit, you know, and you want to half that 1.5 billion. I can use 1.5 billion to improve the schools, the medical system, roads, highways, drainage, forests, water purification, you name it.
Well, you can.
Easy, boys, easy.
Anyway, I think we should move on to the next story because this one has to do with the enforcement of child seats and how it's not happening yet.
How are we still talking about this?
I don't know. I mean, the hard enforcement and the fines were supposed to begin today. If you don't remember, this whole discussion on child seats has been going on since, 1.5 years ago. And the discussion got started by Anthony, the former Transport Minister, Anthony Loke, and he introduced sort of like a grace period from January 2020 all the way to July 2020. And from July 2020, which is today, we are supposed to get fined if we don't use child seats properly. But since COVID happened and COVID has occupied three of those months of the new year, the new transport minister, Mr. Wee Ka Siong, has decided to postpone it to allow the public be better prepared for the regulations. It's a kind of a tricky one, isn't it? Because like on one hand, people don't have money or jobs or a lot of disposable income right now. But on the other hand, preparations for buying child seats and getting original ones and OEM ones, it all began a year ago at least. So there was plenty of time.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say, right? You've had plenty of time to prepare for this. We've had this discussion before. We've said how a bunch of people can't afford to buy these seats. Yes, that's fine. But you've had a year to save up. And it's not like you can use the excuse of we couldn't go out to buy these things anymore because everybody's buying stuff online right now. You know, and I think it's something that it's not just it has to be enforced. It's got to be law, hasn't it? It's got to be that thing where if you are caught, you will be punished. Simple as that. But we need to be doing it now.
Well, gents, you know, I've been talking about child seats for the longest time. I've taken so many pictures when I'm driving around with people having toddlers on their lap while driving, drivers having toddlers on their lap while driving, the front passenger doing the same thing. Even today, I saw one just outside my son's school when I went to pick him up. And, you know, I think people just don't care because it's nothing to do with money because you see people in expensive cars, mid-range cars and also cheap cars doing it. They just don't care. They think, oh, it'll never happen to me. Or I've got an airbag. They don't understand the airbag becomes part of the sandwich and your child is the sandwich filling. And they think that it's never going to happen to them. And when it happens, they blame everybody but themselves. So you know what I say? If you are going to allow this to continue, if anything happens, I'm not going to shed a tear for you. I'm sorry.
Mm. Just adding to that also, it's not that car seats are too expensive these days. I think they've been subsidized, if I remember correctly,
Do you know, if you go online, you can get a car seat, a very decent approved car seat for less than 200 ringgit. And there are so many people selling second-hand car seats because their children have grown up. Like I remember I sold mine online for 50 ringgit. You can still take a second-hand car seat because they don't wear. There may be some poop stains on it, but you know you can wash it off. But if you're really cash-strapped, you can get a 50 ringgit second-hand car seat. Just sanitize it. I mean, think about it. I'm sure you guys have seen people on motorcycles carrying their kids without a helmet.
Yeah,
for sure.
The helmet is 90 ringgit. You know, they just don't care. That's it. There's no further conversation on this. Sorry, I'm a parent, so I get very agitated.
No. I completely understand, man. Right. I mean, I'm not a parent, but it's something that drives me crazy. The fact that I often see way too many passengers in a car, you know, and often with not even the seatbelt fastened, drivers sat with kids on their laps. I really don't understand it. And it's not like this safety message hasn't been told to them. They know what can happen. You know, I think maybe if we had some kind of nationwide campaign, advertising campaign that actually showed them just how dangerous it could be, maybe that might make a change.
You know what would be great? You know, like every day you can see the people who are affected by COVID. There's a graph that shows how many people are affected. You do one for car accidents and, you know, which one is death by no seatbelt, death by no baby seat. dead by this, dead by that. And that will really make a difference. But nobody wants to do that because, you know, it's not hot news.
I remember seeing a couple of really good ones. There was one, I think it was set in Australia, where the couple was sat in the front of the car and they essentially put their spaghetti bolognese that they'd bought as a takeout in the back of the car. And they had to brake hard. And of course, the spaghetti bolognese flew into the front of the car and it splattered all over them. Right. Of course, you know, with it being ketchup and whatever, it looked very graphic.
It looked gruesome.
And the other one was about how a small kid in the back of the car, once you hit those brakes, has the same weight and pressure as a fully grown elephant.
Right.
So when you have a fully grown elephant being thrust from the back of the car into the front of the car, it's going to cause damage. Everybody's going to get hurt, not just the kid in the back. It's going to be everybody in the car.
Right. I just want to share this true story. My niece, when she was a child, 30-odd years ago, her mother had her on the lap. Father braked, and these are educated people. Father braked. She flew under the footwell and was stuck between the edge of the dashboard and the floor of the car.
My God.
But you see, this was 30 years ago when people don't even wear seat belts and things like that. Of course, today she's, you know, she's a mother of a child of her own and all that, and she has baby seat and everything else. But, you know, you remember something like that, and you say to yourself, why did it happen? He wasn't speeding or anything like that. But, you know, those days, even the dashboards were not fully covered.
Yeah.
Yeah, so imagine now if today you do that, you hit the windscreen, you hit the dashboard, you go underneath the car. There's so many ways for the child to be injured and killed. Sorry, but people don't listen.
All right, we're going to take a short break here. And when we come back, we've got some local car launches that should be followed by a few international car launches. Am I right?
Yeah, much happier stuff.
Much happier stuff. And then we've got a used car review. Don't go anywhere. You are tuned into Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. I'm joined on the line by Arif Ruse, that man with the news. Say hello, Arif.
Hello, everybody.
And somewhere over there in another wild land is Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, Richard. Hello, Arif. And hello, listeners.
Okay, so we had some news a little bit earlier on. We spoke very briefly about AP holders. And then we moved on to the enforcement of child seats. That's not happening yet. Had a bit of a chat about that. Bit of a whinge, bit of a gripe. But I think it's fair to say we came to a conclusion that just go out and buy a car seat, will you? Don't be fools. Now, car launches. Tell us all about these. What have we got locally?
Right. So locally, super expensive cars to start with, but it's the Rolls-Royce Black Badge family. It's not just the Black Badge Wraith, Cullinan, Ghost, or Dawn. It's the entire Black Badge Rolls-Royce family. So according to Rolls-Royce, the average age of their buyers has lowered from 58 to 40, and they've responded with creating a Black Badge family. It's basically a Rolls-Royce for the disruptor and the entrepreneur with a lot of money. It's not old money anymore. Old money is kind of Bentley's thing now. New money is kind of Rolls-Royce's thing. So the Black Badge kind of gives you a lot of attitude. So bespoke black grills, carbon fiber wheels, a black spirit of ecstasy, an infinity symbol that harks back to the 1930s land speed record heritage. And apparently, of all the ASEAN regions, only Malaysia gets all four Black Badge Rolls-Royces. So the Wraith, the Ghost, the Dawn, and the Cullinan, because they say that our market is a bit more developed for it.
A bit more developed for it? Why is Malaysia a bit more developed?
They were explaining Malaysia does have quite a good concentration of entrepreneurs and people moving in and out.
It does. It does. I would have thought, though, that Singapore would have been on that list.
Right. Right, but I guess it's a bit more difficult to buy cars in Singapore and own them compared to over here or elsewhere, I guess.
The numbers here are much higher than Singapore. Even though Singapore does a lot of Rolls-Royce sales, but you can't match the sales that have been happening right here.
How many Rolls-Royces do we think we sell on average per year?
They will never disclose this figure, but I'm thinking easy, 40, 50 units a year shouldn't be a problem.
Are you serious? Really?
I think for sure. I mean, if you put together what's coming from the grey market, the AP holders and official Rolls-Royces, I think that's a very fair figure.
You still see them, quite a lot of them parked around Bangsa and Bukit Bintang. an outside pavilion, that sort of thing.
But there's none parked outside my house.
There's none parked on my street either.
But anyway, I think the most interesting black badge Rolls-Royce is the Dawn. The Dawn is Rolls-Royce's 2+2 convertible, but instead of the rear seats, they put like a Porsche Speedster style aero cowling, which makes the car look a bit more sporty, a bit more exclusive, I guess. I actually asked Rolls-Royce how exclusive is the black badge, and then they just said, every Rolls-Royce is exclusive.
Oh, one of those things. If you have to ask the price, you don't need to know.
Exactly, exactly. That is why all the prices start with tax-free values, like 1.7 million for the Cullinan Black Badge, tax-free. Because why? When people go in to buy these cars, they are always ticking on the option boxes, you know? You can go up to maybe, you know, with tax, maybe 4.2, 4.3, 4.4 million ringgit.
We're just not going to go mention the price. The other car that got launched this week, or rather towards the end of last week, was the second-gen Range Rover Evoque. It's the brand-new Range Rover Evoque. The Evoque that was styled by Victoria Beckham is now revised and refreshed after, I think, being 7 years in the market. So it's still got the unique Evoque shape, which is kind of cute, pretty cool as well. But with modern updates like Daniel's favorite pop-out handles, we've got Land Rover's new lighting systems, which makes the car look really, really cool at night. And gloss black SUV style trim to, you know, cover all the to make it look a bit more sporty, really.
To me, actually, this looks like a miniaturized Vela.
That is exactly what it is, I think.
I thought it looked like a Tonka toy.
True, because of the big wheels and this very thin glass wraparound. Yeah.
I like the rear end of it. It looks nice, but it reminds me of a Tonka toy that I might have had when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, for these Tonka toys, they're bringing two versions, which is the P200 with 200 horsepower and the P250 with 250 horsepower. Both come with a 9-speed auto, massive updates on the interior, such as Range Rover's new 3-screen setup with the little rotary dial with an LCD screen in the middle. Of course, all Land Rovers come with the entire safety suite, but it's very expensive. The P200 Tonka truck comes in at 427,000 ringgit, while the P250 comes in at 476,000 ringgit. That really Blimey. Is quite a lot of money.
It's much more expensive than the first generation Evoque. And of course, now you have the currency exchange, everything moving sideways. But the thing is, the resale value of these cars are quite interesting, and we'll talk about it next week.
Oh, will we?
Yes, a used car review on the first generation Evoque.
Well, there you go. At least now we've got content for next week.
Yes.
Okay, what else have we got? I know we've got something looking very cool up next.
Yes, this one is a global car launch. It's the 2021 Kia Optima, which is basically the same platform and the same sort of mechanics as the Hyundai Sonata. But the Kia Optima being a bit, I think Kia's a younger kind of brand, it will have a sportier 2.5-liter turbo version, which will compete against Volkswagen's Passat R-Line on the Volkswagen Arteon that we talked about last week. So this car will apparently have 290 horsepower, and it looks really, really cool.
It really does.
Yeah, it's quite pretty too, I think. It stands out in the right ways. You get all-wheel drive, and the positive thing is you don't get a CVT gearbox, which is the gearbox that lets every car down, really. You have a Kia Stinger-style interior as well. And if you can't afford the 2.5-liter turbo version, you still can get the 1.6-liter turbo, which makes the same power as a 2.5 Camry, which, if they bring it here and it costs the same price as the Camry for the 1.6 turbo, you're paying, I think, much lower insurance, much lower road tax as well. So that's a winner in my book.
But knowing Kia, the price will be definitely lower than the Camry because they are always competitive against Toyota and Honda.
Yeah.
So with this look, with that kind of engine, if everything goes well, under 160,000, I think, bang for your buck.
I like it. Mm. I've got to admit, it looks really nice. Yes. All right, shall we move on to something you know, that we are looking for in the second-hand market?
Yes, yes.
How about something like the Toyota GT86 Subaru BRZ? What did you call it? What did you call it on your website? The Toybaru.
Toyobaru.
Oh, Toyobaru. Yes. Okay.
Toyobaru.
I like
it. Now the thing is, you see, for the past few weeks, we've talked about MPVs, we've talked about SUVs, we've talked about expensive sedans going cheap, and all the cars we talked about were actually quite easy on the pocket in terms of being able to purchase. Now, this is not so easy on the pocket because we're looking at something that hasn't depreciated all that much, but suddenly there's a lot of these cars coming on the used car market.
Yeah, I was quite surprised at how many of these are on the used car market right now.
Yes. And in fact, Richard, you said one of your friends is also selling one.
That's right, yeah. He's had it quite a while as well.
So, you know, like last year, you see one or two coming in the market. Normally, they're unregistered. Importers have brought in. But suddenly, you're seeing a lot of registered units. So, I did a little bit of analysis, and this is what I think is happening. These cars are owned by people. You know, everyone dreams of owning a sports car. You know, something German, something exotic. But, you know, they cost a few hundred thousand dollars. But when you look at the GT86 and the Subaru BRZ, they have that exotic looks. They have decent amount of power, great handling, but they don't cost the earth. And they're very, very easy to run on a month-to-month basis. Mm-hmm. So what happens is these are people who probably couldn't afford something costing $250 or $350, even though they're used. They decided to buy, you know, these cars, when they were reconditioned, they were $150, $160 coming in from Japan. So if you get a nice loan, your monthly installment is not too bad. You got a nice sporty car. You can live with it. But when the market goes downwards and you probably have a job issue or your business is suffering, the first thing that is going to go is your nice little weekend toy car. You get what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. They're the first things to let go because they're not practical at all. You don't really need them, especially one that's in manual.
Yes, and a lot of these people, I don't think this is their first car, because the ones that are selling, if you talk to them, they've spent a lot of money, you know, buying parts, tuning them, handling bits. Even like what you said, Richard, your friend's car, you spend a lot of money on aftermarket parts, which you will not get back in the for sale price. Selling it means you're really tight, you're really forced to let go of the car. So no choice, I have to absorb the loss and just let it go. So great time for someone who's looking to buy one, because you can get a car with all the go faster bits in it, all the little performance enhanced aftermarket accessories that would cost you 40, 50,000 ringgit brand new. You may just have to pay an extra 10,000 or 15,000 ringgit on top of whatever price that you're paying, and you get all this. But the question now is, what do you look for in a car like this? Both cars are very similar. The Toyota GT86, the BRZ, very similar. Of course, when you park them side by side, like what RF has done with the picture, you can see there's a slight difference in the lights, the front bumper, the rear lights, the rear bumper. But inside, underneath, it's all similar. Now, handling, bang for your buck. This car really handles. This is really a driver sports car. And of course, if you get it manual, it's more fun. But most people just buy it in auto because, you know, without traffic conditions and everything else. But for me, I want a manual, especially with a car like this.
If you're buying a sports car, especially if it's a second, you know, your second car or your weekend car, especially if it's a car like a GT86, just get the manual, man.
Of course. That's what we tell everybody. But, you know, sales of manual cars are just getting lower and lower and lower in Malaysia. And even car manufacturers are not interested in bringing in manual-driven cars anymore. So what is the problem with the GT86? The first biggest problem is this car came with a fantastic chassis, good build quality, excellent dynamics, but a very, very sedated engine. It's a 2-liter non-turbocharged engine. It's got a decent, you know, 197 to 200 brake horsepower. Torque figures are good. The top speed is decent, 220 odd kilometers. The 0 to 100 dash is done in about 7-point-something seconds. But you know, all this is not really important, because why? A lot of people say this chassis can take more power. And of course, year after year, when we meet with people from Toyota from Japan and also Subaru from Japan, we ask them, why haven't you put in a turbocharged engine? You already have it in your portfolio, you know?
Yeah.
And they always say the same thing. Not yet, not yet. So our evaluation of this is because they developed this car as a starter, fun, you know, rear-wheel drive, hot sports car. So I get it out. Once I've sold enough units, I've made back my investment in this car. I come out with version 2 with the turbocharged engine and more power, and I get all the first generation people upgrading.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's recently been announced, because the GT86 has been around since 2012, right? So it's technically 8 years old. And next year, the new version is still going to be produced by Toyota, developed by Toyota and Subaru. Yes. And all the rumors are coming out saying that it's going to be turbo. It's going to be turbo. And the weird thing is, like you said just now, they do have turbo engines in their portfolio.
Both of them have.
Yeah, it's this, especially Subaru, because this is technically a similar plant to the STI engines because it's a 2 liter flat
Boxer,
four,
yes.
four, right? So a lot of people just buy this car, slap on a turbo and a few upgrades, and Bob's your uncle. You have a fantastic 240, 270 horsepower car. I think I want to talk a little bit about the differences between both of them. And from what I found, I'm going to start with the names. we seem to have a thing going on about names in our show. So this car apparently has 5 different names.
Of course it does. You know, just because things aren't confusing enough.
Right, right. So it's called the Toyota 86, the GT86, the FT86, the Subaru BRZ, and the Scion FRS. The Scion FRS is only the North American market, but it follows up to what Daniel said, where you really get a standard, box standard car with no amenities at all. All you have is a modifiable engine, a fantastic chassis, and a rear-wheel driven car, which is everything you need for a really, really good sports car. And it's kind of reflected in how these 8 years have gone for this first generation Toyota 86, because if you see a Toyota 86 or a BRZ on the road in Malaysia, chances are it's already modified. Because yes. The modding community behind this is huge, and Toyota intended for it to be a box standard sports car where you can buy it for $20,000 and then you can slap on $15,000 worth of parts and go racing with it. So throughout these 8 years, they've launched 86 special editions with different specs, body kits, limited run models, and catering to the modding community. You got amateur and pro racing, you have drift builds, and even rally racing, which, you know, this is really the sports car for the car enthusiast. And it shows that you don't need big power to have a lot of fun with a car.
It's kind of in that respect and how you can just mold it and create whatever you want from it. It reminds me of like the old Mark 1 Escorts back in the UK or the Mark 2 Escorts.
You're very right, Richard. You're very right. That's exactly what, you know, these are cars actually built looking at the enthusiast community and also the racing community more than looking at people to use it as a supermarket commuter car.
Yeah, that's what the MX-5, I guess, bridges. It's True. Kind of like a supermarket car as yeah. well as a weekend yeah. car. The differences between both the BRZ and the Toyota 86 is BRZ is, when it was new, it was priced slightly higher. So they had slightly better amenities. They had a new infotainment screen that was slightly more expensive compared to the Toyota 86. They had more leather. They have more of everything. But the flip side of that is, of course, you're adding weight to a car that basically weighs nothing. The Toyota 86 weighs about 1,200 kilos. The way I would look at this car is that imagine a Lotus Elise, but far more practical with a boot that you can use. It's still got a reliable engine, and it's far less aggressive. It doesn't want to break your back. It's technically entertainment at legal speeds, so cars that don't have to have high power to make you smile. I was doing some research on this, and I found out that there was a British Toyota GT86 commercial titled The Real Deal, and it was banned for encouraging motorists to drive irresponsibly. So I think the ad was showing pictures of the 86 going around corners sideways and all that stuff. So that's...
Oh, those crazy Brits.
Yeah. Yeah. A few more interesting things about this Toyota 86 is the first thing is the number 86 harks back to Toyota's small sports coupes back in the day. So if you've played or heard of Initial D, lots of people will compare this to the original Toyota AE86 or the Tofu Racer.
Correct, the Levin.
Yeah, and then the 86 also refers to the bore and stroke of the Boxer engine, which is 86 millimeters by 86 millimeters. And the theme doesn't end there because the exhaust, the tip, is also 86 millimeters in diameter. So this car is as 86 as it can be.
So what did we say you should be aiming to pay for one of these?
Okay, this is a tricky bit. Now, about 4 or 5 years ago, we were in Japan for a Toyota trip, and we happened to go to one of their circuits where they gave us their new showroom cars to test drive. And at the side of the circuit in the garage, we saw dozens of these cars sitting there with livery on it, race cars.
Yeah.
So we asked them, what is the whole purpose of this? They said, well, these are weekend racers. You see, in Japan, there are so many race circuits, and they're all proper, full-endorsed race circuits. They've got a huge racing community. So a lot of Japanese people who are enthusiasts, who love to race, they could be working in a radio station in the daytime, but at night or on the weekends, you want to go to a circuit, have a track day special car. So these are cars they don't bring home. You get what I mean?
Yes. They just store it on the track?
Yes. You know, when they buy it from Toyota, Toyota, I think, sells these cars with less equipment in it. Maybe there's no infotainment, maybe there's no leather, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these cars are basically, people go on the weekend, they just whack it, they have a lot of fun, and then they come back. And these cars are driven really hard. But, you know, they are maintained and they're looked after. But they have a very short lifespan. Now, I come back to Malaysia some years later. I happen to drive past the Grey Importer yard and I see about 40 of these cars sitting there.
40?
Yeah, 40. Still with their Japanese race livery. And you know, these are like little sponsors' names and numbers and everything else. So I go and ask one of the guys there, I say, what are these cars for? Oh, we're going to refurbish this car and sell.
Wow.
And true enough, few months pass, maybe a few weeks, and it's sitting in the showroom, beautiful new paint job, infotainment system done locally, leather done locally, new tires, but underneath it's still all the same. You get what I mean, guys?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So from the factory in Japan, it was a track-inspired bare to the bones car.
Yes.
And then when they brought it here, they just
brought it back to life. Yes. You see, because why? To do leather, no issue. Infotainment, no issue. To get a new coat of paint, no issue. Rims, tires, no issue. And then you can sell it as a car that is slightly modified because it's already lowered, it's got a tuned exhaust. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
The trick is, all these cars are manual.
Mm.
It's not for me to tell people not to buy these cars, but you know, these cars have really been weathered. Now, of course, mileage all readjusted, looking beautiful. And these cars were all sold for a very good price. Because at that time, the dealer advertised it as manual car, difficult to sell. Do you want to buy? That kind of thing, you know?
What would we be expecting for the BRZ or the 86? What sort of price range?
Okay, like you said, it's not the manuals are more expensive. But you see, if you're buying a manual which came as a road-going car, then of course, by all means, buy it. So what I'm saying is, when you're going to buy this car used, look out for certain telltale signs. If the car has been heavily modified, I think, number one, walk away from it. Unless you know the owner, but the owner itself doesn't know what happened in Japan.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Number two, if you buy a car with a fresh coat of paint, I think you should be worried. If it came with the original paint, and it's very easy to check for original paint. Like we said before, you know, you pull out the carpets, you pull out the little panels inside the door, you can actually see whether the paint matches. And, you know, if the paint is too fresh and wonderful, you have to start worrying.
Mm.
And then, if you open the engine bay, and if you see little markings, little telltale signs that this car has been used for racing, and that's very easy to tell. Because why? If people put aftermarket accessories, they're all branded, right?
Yeah.
But if they come from Japan, sometimes these branded accessories are not sold in Malaysia. These are Japan-only branded accessories.
The Japan OEM aftermarket stuff.
So you got to do a little bit of research. I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a 50-50 thing. So for me, if I'm going to buy one of these cars, I'm going to buy one that's stock standard, sitting on normal, you know, showroom height with normal wheels and everything else. Then I would rather just go and buy the parts which I want to put in. But if you're going to buy something that's been done up and it's sounding great and it's aggressive and all that, you could be buying an X track day special from Japan.
Good to know. Yeah.
So prices start from as low as 95,000 to as high as 125,000. Be careful, do your research, take a mechanic if you can who you can trust to evaluate the car for you.
I want to add one last closing statement. I mean, I've been looking for coupes for quite a while. Obviously, this is way out of my price range. I'm more of a 20,000 kind of guy. But looking at this car, you know, 200 horsepower, 7.6 seconds to 0 to 100, and it handles extremely well. You got a manual gearbox, rear-wheel drive. This is literally the perfect car for, you know, if it's single car enthusiasts or if there's just the two of you. You don't need the boot space. You don't need ISOFIX anchor points, which it does have anyway. But a long time ago, everybody was just going crazy about coupes and how individualized it is to you, right? It's your sports car. This is kind of the modern interpretation. So I think if you don't need more than two seats, and if you don't mind handling a manual gearbox in KL, this is really the perfect car. There's no point buying anything else other than this.
If you're in that frame of mind and like all of those things that you like, Arif.
Well, yes, but I think a lot of people will find this car pretty cool too.
I agree with what you're saying. You know it's going to be fun. Yeah. You know there's going to be part of it that's going to be a little bit challenging, but that's going to make it all the more fun to get out there and just drive around it, you know?
That's exactly what I meant to say.
Right, shall we wrap up, ladies and gentlemen?
Yes, yes.
We have come to the end of the show, folks, but if you've missed any part of this show, don't forget you can head over to bfm.my and download the podcast from there. Also, you can get it on the app, available in the Apple App Store or, of course, on Google Play. We will be back, same time, same place, next week, here on Cruise Control on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.